Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Lay Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul. Good evening. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Lay Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, I want to share with you a very interesting concept that is dining in total darkness, or also known as blind dining. And this has become a huge trend in major cities like New York, Paris, London, LA, Montreal, Toronto, and now Vancouver. And so today I'll focus on a particular restaurant in Vancouver called Dark Table. And this restaurant is located at 2611 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver City in Canada. An evening at Dark Table will take you on a culinary journey through uncharted territory, where the familiar, like food, drink, and friends, becomes a wonder to be explored and discovered as if for the very first time. Without the sense of sight, the senses of touch, taste, smell, and hearing become intensified, allowing a new perception of reality. Dark Table offers Vancouver exceptional cuisine, superb service, and a voyage to the unknown. So now you hear an interview with the manager at Dark Table, Sammy Musatat, who will tell us the unique concept of Dark Table. And for more information about Dark Table, go to the website www.darktable.ca. That is www.darktable.ca. Thank you, Sammy, for coming onto my show to talk about your restaurant, The Dark Table. Can you share with us the concepts behind The Dark Table?
Yeah, so the original concept originated in Switzerland, Zurich. It was by a blind gentleman who started the first black dining, like dark dining in there. And then the founder of Dark Table first dined there in 2006, and he decided it's a very neat idea, and he brought it to Canada, Montreal at the beginning. After that, we expanded to Toronto in 2009, and then finally we opened in Vancouver in 2012.
So all those three restaurants in Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver are still running?
They're all still running, yes.
So the restaurant in Montreal started in 2006?
2006, so it's been about 10 years. The restaurant in Toronto opened in 2009, and Vancouver 2012, yes.
So tell us more about why would sighted people be interested in a restaurant with a very unique concept like this?
For most people, it's very rare that we come to encounter dealing with people who are blind. For blind people, or our servers that works in the dining rooms are usually legally blind, so they're blind or visually impaired. Usually when you meet a blind person out on the street, you try to give them a hand crossing the road or something like that. So they feel somewhat dependent, but when you're in the dark, you're totally helpless and you entirely depend on the blind guide to do anything for you, from taking you to the washroom or bringing you a spoon or changing your drink. So they feel empowered, as well as being in the dark give us a great appreciation for the gift that we have, but sometimes we forget that some individuals miss it sorely. So it's an empowerment, it's an appreciation, as well as it's creating job for the community of blind people.
So it's for diversity awareness and a little bit of what it's like to be blind, what it's like to depend on other people for help and support.
Of course, this you could say that, and at the same, that's the human part of it, or the responsible part of it. At the same time, it is extremely fun. It's usually a night full of laughter and an adventure, and obviously it enhances your other senses. So you become more aware of your hearing, you become more aware of your smelling, your taste. So, you know, it's a responsible, humane experience, as well as it's a very intriguing and fun experience.
I am blind myself, and so going to dark table, it's not a big difference for me. And yet, when I went there with my sighted friends and husband, it was a very eye-opening experience for them. We had lots of fun, and there was a lot of laughter and a lot of great experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, even lots of my friends or my relatives, when they come try it the first time, because you get an honest reaction, and it was always a very positive reaction.
So the founder himself, he is sighted?
He is, yes.
How about you yourself as the manager?
I am sighted.
So what was it like for you as a sighted person to go to dark table for the first time?
I always thought that the lights were going to come on at some point, but they never did. At the beginning, just like everyone else, I was nervous because, you know, it's like someone taking something away from you for a bit. But at the same time, intrigued because I wanted to see how this works. I wanted to let go or be able to let go easily. So the lights never came on, and the dinner was great and had an amazing conversation. And that's when I fell in love with it.
So you were there right from the start?
I started with the founder once they opened Toronto. And that was around 2009. And I've been with them ever since.
So can you walk through for us what exactly is it like to dine at dark table?
Yeah, so we are, because of the nature of the concept, we are mostly reservations, just so we can control the workflow. We do have set times, so people have to make a reservation. Usually a big chunk of people arrive at the same time. And for the restaurant in Vancouver, there's a garden patio where people can place their order outside with the hostess. If there is any allergies, anything they prefer not to have on their plate, they just let the hostess know. And then they place their orders, and then they have to turn off their phones completely because of the lights.
So some people, they cheat too, don't they, with their cell phones?
You know, there is always cheaters. We try to control it as much as possible. It's a smaller location in Vancouver. So we don't have lockers, where in Montreal we had lockers. We could just take their phones and stuff. To be honest, when we first started in Montreal, people were still not attached to their phone as much as they are now. So we assumed asking people to give away their phones was a very personal thing. So we just asked them kindly to turn it off. And then the server will come outside. So every reservation has a specific server attached to it. The server will come outside, will give a brief explanation how things work and introduce his name. And it's a double door system. So once you go in, you're in a little room. And then once you're ready, they'll start leading you to your table and seating you and explaining the table setup. And if people needed to go to the washroom beforehand, they do that.
So your restaurant is set up, is completely pitch dark, isn't it?
Yeah, the room is set up. We say it's about 98% pitch black. There is completely no light. It's all blacked out. The way our restaurant in Vancouver is set up, the bar is in the middle of the room. So when you finish, there's like a curtain entrance to a little paying area, which you can go in after your dinner and pay your bill, and then you exit a curtain and then you leave to the doors. So most like most of the process is 99%, 98% dark, pitch black.
So how do customers go to the washroom if they need to?
Yeah, so anything you need while you're having dinner, basically you have to yell your server's name in a way. We say yell because people, being in the dark, they tend to speak a bit louder than usual because you lose a sense of space, especially for sighted people. If there are groups of three or over, because they don't know where their other friends are sitting for some reason, they yell it out a little bit. So yell your server's name, no matter what their name is, and then your server will come in and just tell him, I need to go to the washroom, I need to, you know, go pay my bill or whatever it is you want to do. But it's all done by communication, vocal communication.
But a washroom has light, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Your server will take you to the washroom. They'll tell you that the doors to the right is for males, the door to the left is for females. You can go in, and then when you're done, just wait for me in the hall, and I'll be back in a few minutes. So once you go to the washroom, there is light, and it's very dimmed, but because people are sitting in the dark, they can clearly feel the light. And then you finish the washroom, and then your server will be back in no time.
So how do they pay?
So once you're done, it's kind of a three-course meal. Once your dessert is served, and your dessert drinks are served, your server will come around and let you know when you're done. Just let me know and I will take you to the bar area. If it's a large group, they'll take the person who's paying. If it's a small group, they'll take everyone. You get a little window which has dimmed light, and you can talk to the hostess, the bartender there. Any questions you have about your food, if there's things you couldn't identify, you can ask them there. And then you can obviously pay your bill as well. And once you're done paying, again, the same process. Your server will come in, will pick you up, and will take you outside.
So how do they order from the menu?
Yeah, so they read the menu outside in the patio. It's a three-course menu, so you can do a starter, a main dish, and desserts. The starter and the desserts are always a surprise. You can complete it with a main dish surprise if you want to, or you can pick from five options on the menu. We do daily vegetarian and vegan surprises upon request, so just let us know when you're making your reservation. There is a drink menu as well, so you could drink a glass of wine or tea or something. That's all done outside in the light. If there is, if we have blind customers, we have the menu done in Braille as well. Yeah, everything is done outside. And then when you're done and you're comfortable, we ask you to turn off your phone and we'll take you in to the dark room.
So the servers are legally blind. How about the cook?
The cook are actually sighted. We actually haven't got people interested in the cooking job. We hire all kinds of people with disability. Actually, we have people who are deaf that work in the kitchen. But I guess like for knife skills and stuff, we haven't yet met the right candidate that who could be visually impaired and skilled in the kitchen. But we're always open to that.
So you mostly only take reservations. How many customers can you accommodate in a given night?
Correct. So we are licensed for 85, but we tend to do only around 70, 75 maximum per seating. And we have two seatings per night, yeah.
So when are those seatings?
So the first, we open at 5:45 every single day. So usually the first seating, the early one starts at 5:45 and we take people up until 6:15. And then the later seating, it's 8:30 on the weekdays and it's 8:45 on the weekend. We don't fill up 75 seats unless we have larger groups. Usually it's around 50 to 60 where we have more couples. But on the weekend, like a day like today, like Saturday, we have groups of 15, 16. So the restaurant, fills up quite a bit. And we don't do lunch unless we have requests for large groups, 15 or more. So sometimes we do like some schools do like a psychology class or like they wanted to know more about people with disability working. So they bring classes or some companies do like a team build up experiences in the dark. So we do some lunches sometimes.
So do most of your customers come as couples or do they come in groups?
I would say 50% of our reservations are couples. And then like usually the Fridays and the Saturdays we have large groups, but you know, it depends, it always change, but we always have a big chunk of couples, and usually people celebrate their birthdays or they meet their friends on the weekend, so we get larger groups. Yeah,
I guess it can be quite a fun experience to go in groups.
Exactly, and you know, it's a very nice spot for a blind date. We had a lot of blind dates happened in the past.
Oh, really? I haven't thought of that.
And yeah, we're thinking seriously soon to introduce a blind date night, maybe sometimes in the end of the summer, yeah.
So I understand that the founder of Dark Table has also found a restaurant for the hearing impaired community, Defined, I believe it's called.
That is correct. Unfortunately, that restaurant has closed now. Yeah, we opened Defined in May 2015, and we wanted to transfer the experience, but with people who are hearing impaired. I think there was the restaurant and the idea went well, and there was a lot of media coverage. I think there was something about the location, because you had to go up the stairs, and we had a problem with people who have wheelchairs and stuff like that. So for the moment, that project is on hold, and hopefully in the future something will happen that we can bring it back.
Do you find that the experience between the Dark Table for the visually impaired community versus the Defined restaurant for the hearing impaired community, do you find that experience be qualitatively different? Because I would imagine that going to a restaurant like Dark Table would be a little bit more intimidating, whereas a restaurant like the Defined restaurant would be less intimidating, because you can kind of point at the menu and then you would eat just like you would eat anywhere else.
To be honest, that's what we initially thought. But after going through Defined, we realized there are people more comfortable if they don't see you, but they can still talk to you. And that's why I think the deaf community is a little bit more tougher community to get into. Because they assume that lots of people don't want to learn their languages, and this kind of closes them apart from other communities. So they tend to be more in their communities, where in the blind community, yes, they can't see you, but they can easily communicate with you. So for customer point of view, being in the dark is intriguing. It's interesting, and it's somewhat sexy.
Yeah, I guess it can be sexy and romantic to eat in the dark with your partner or spouse.
It is, because people feel intimate, that you can't see who you're with, but you can still definitely say anything you want, and that's interesting. And no matter what, you can say anything to your server and you will be fine. But I feel like some people were intimidated by the fact that some of the servers were hearing impaired at Defined, and they either didn't come or they tried their best to point or write. Yeah, we can't really judge because we didn't give it enough time, but for the short time that was there, that's what we thought.
You know, in a multicultural city like Vancouver, lots of servers don't speak English, so I would think the experience of pointing and gesturing would be quite common, and so an experience that you would find at Defined would be quite a common experience.
Yeah, I mean, so many people, you would tell them about Dark Table and they would say, oh, I like to see my foods, or, you know, or I'm not comfortable. There's some people that actually get pretty claustrophobic from being in the dark. I mean, we usually, like every week or so, we have a table or two at least that has to leave and they don't feel comfortable. So you would think so. Again, we can't really judge because I don't think it was long enough so we could judge the experience at Defined. But I can tell you Dark Table is really busy. And there is people that are scared of the dark, but there's a lot of people that enjoy being in it.
Yeah, I guess it can really bring out the extremes in people, isn't it? Because for some people, an experience at Dark Table would be quite anxiety provoking and lots of fear. And then for some people, they look at that as lots of fun and they feel very adventurous about it.
In a sense, for sighted people, at least, I think it slows them down. You're asking people to finally leave their phones aside. You're asking people to be dependent. So I guess it's for sighted people, it's somewhat relaxing once they let go. And I think that adrenaline rush of letting go, of being in the dark, of being helpless is interesting. So, you know, we've seen bad reaction. We've seen some people that get really scared of being in the dark, but it's usually not that high of a percentage.
Do you see any differences between the restaurants in Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver?
To be honest, the differences are just actually the differences between the city. But in terms of the restaurant, you know, people in Montreal, they like to go out, they go out late, and, you know, they like foods and drinks, but it's the same as everywhere else. The Vancouver market was maybe a little bit tougher to crack into. But like initially, once people knew enough about the restaurant and once they came in, it was probably a similar process in all three cities. Yeah. However, Quebec government was, as I remember, the most helpful in terms of like giving help with hiring people who are blind. With they were the most helpful in the process of opening the restaurant. Where in BC we had some difficulties when we first opened. The liquor board suspended our liquor license for some reasons. They thought that the idea was a little bit different, and they wanted to make sure that blind servers can, you know, go through the same guidelines as any other servers in terms of serving alcohol. So that was a little bit frustrating at the beginning, but now it's all good.
So they had some safety concerns?
Exactly. One of the inspector came in and she didn't know the restaurant was in the dark.
That must be surprising for her, huh?
Yeah, and one of the blind servers was talking to her and she didn't know he was blind, and she was put off by the way that they're not looking at her and they didn't take her into the dark because they didn't know who she is. But then once we explained things to her, she suspended the license for a while, and then we had to explain things and give her some sort of plan and explain to her that blind people can do exactly the same job as sighted people in terms of controlling and monitoring. It's just you can't see, and sometimes the sighted people can't see what you're doing. So we went through that process, and then everything was okay. And once they understood the whole concept of the restaurant and the whole feel, it was all good. It was all a green light after that.
So how many servers do you have?
Usually five. On a quieter night, three or four. On a very busy night, six. Yeah, we tried more than that, but our restaurant is not very big. And, you know, when you have like four or three plates in your hands in the dark, I think a minimal number of servers helps. Yeah.
So thank you, Sammy, for sharing with us about your restaurant, Dark Table.
Oh, no problem. Perfect. Thank you very much for calling, and hopefully we'll hear this interview soon.
And that was Sammy Moussatat, manager at the Dark Table restaurant. For more information about Dark Table, go to the website www.darktable.ca. And now here is a conversation with my husband, Hans, who will share with you his experience with Dark Table, as well as his experience in general, having a wife who is visually impaired. Here is Hans Leigh Erickson. So Hans, you went to the Dark Table twice. What was it like for you both times?
Yeah, the first time I went to the Dark Table, it was a little bit, I don't know, almost intimidating, but because I didn't know what to expect, you know, and we went with a couple of friends of ours, so that made it a lot easier because there's other people there that I knew we could share the experience with, you know. So It's quite a place for sure. Like when you go there, you order your food outside because it's absolutely pitch black inside, right? You can't see your hand in front of your face. So you order outside from the menu, then they take you into this little ante room, like between outside and inside, where it's already kind of dark, and you've got to line up and put your hand on the person's shoulder in front of you. So you got to make like a snake line, and then your server, who's blind, leads you into this pitch black room and to your table, and then gets you situated there. Brings you some water, and it kind of starts like that. The food is good. I mean, the service is great. It's amazing to see the servers work, because you can't imagine moving around in that place because you have no idea where anything is or how many people are there. So it's quite a time. I was lucky because, I was with you for a couple of years by then, so I've got to see how you navigate a dining room table. How you pick things up, how you pick up a glass from the bottom instead of trying to reach for it at the top like we're used to doing as sighted people. So, but you can hear people dropping things and glasses getting knocked over and different things going on around the tables. But I think our group was really good. We had a good time and everybody got through it pretty uneventfully, I think. I don't think there was too much food up where it shouldn't be. But you realize, it's a different world, right? When you can't see and that you're dependent on other people, like even for going to the washroom, if you had to go to the washroom, you had to get your server, you had to call them over and you had to ask them, "Can you take me to the bathroom, please?" So that was different for sure. It was a good experience. It was a real eye-opener considering we're in a pitch black room, It really taught you something.
Yeah, no, I think you did great because even prior to that, I think I asked you, would you go to a place like that? And you told me, no way, right?
Yeah, and I guess part of that was, just my bias, right? Thinking, how can blind people give you any kind of good experience? Like, how are they
My
gonna?
husband is so multicultural.
I'm multicultural to a point, right? But I mean, it's just the society's bias, right? Towards blind people, towards people with disabilities in general. You don't realize just how capable they really are, until you are part of their world.
And so, was there any difference for the second time for you?
The
Other
sec
than to kind of feeling more comfortable?
Well, I was definitely feeling more comfortable, and I could relax more, and just enjoy it because I knew it was a totally safe environment, and I knew that I was going to enjoy a good meal and that the service would be good. And that time we went with strangers because it was a fundraising event where you were actually giving a speech there, and so we got to meet some different people and get their perspective. I mean, it was a service club. I guess it was the Lions Club, and so it was a group from the west side of Vancouver, so they're fairly affluent. They're pretty well educated. They're used to being able to do everything they want to do. They're used to having what they want to have, and they usually don't have too many restrictions in their lives, right? So, one lady at our table was actually pretty overwhelmed. She couldn't even stay in the room before dinner, because it was just too dark. She just couldn't take that feeling of not seeing because you literally can't see a thing. It's pitch black.
Yeah.
and,
And
and
yet her husband was, very open and calm about it, and he saw that as an adventure.
No, he did. He was really excited kind of by it, just experiencing something new because it really is an experience.
What was your perception of blindness prior to meeting me?
Well, I mean, I had a blind massage therapist, and she was an older lady who lost her sight, I guess, as a young teenager. She was pretty capable. She was an excellent massage therapist, but she worked in her home. She had her tenants upstairs do her shopping for her, and she seemed to live a smaller life, right? And I don't think she went out very much. She didn't, she spent most of her time at home and lived quietly like that. So, and I figured that's how most blind people live their lives, right? You don't hear about them going out, working, doing different things, I mean, unless you're lucky enough to know somebody. And once I met you, then I realized, holy smokes, like you used to work at the hospital, so you had to take the SkyTrain, which is like a public transit train. And then you would switch buses in downtown Vancouver, like across six lanes of traffic, and go down, take to the hospital, and walk another mile or so to get there. And then you're really good at your job on top of it. You know, it wasn't just, hey, I can get here, but you can get there and then be effective, you know, and help people and change their lives. And, you know, that really was a remarkable to me, you know. And then the more time I spent with you, the more I realized, you know, it's not, I don't know, you know, and then I met different blind people, you know, that you worked with and that you knew. And I realized, you know, they're people just like everybody else, you know, they have hopes and dreams and goals for their lives, and they get things done.
So you have any funny experiences sharing with our listeners?
You know, there's a few times where it's almost like I forget you're blind, you know, and I would drag you into different situations, you know, like whether it's running down a flight of stairs when we were trying to get to the car before it got towed away, or we went hiking and I made you hike through the woods through this incredibly rugged trail, you know, up and down the side of the mountain with rocks and roots sticking out. And it was challenging for me, but I can't imagine how tough it was for you, because I would say, oh, there's a rock, but what does that really mean? You know, is it sticking up? Is it sticking out sideways? Is it? That was a pretty big challenge for sure, especially since I didn't totally know where I was going. So it gets a little bit stressful trying to lead and guide and help you get through it, and not be able to say, oh, it's just another 5 minutes, when I said that about 10 times, and it was really quite a hike. So that was pretty fun.
How do we watch movies together?
Oh, you know, usually it's good for me if I watch the movie first,
Yes.
and then we watch it together, because it's easier to describe it that way. I mean, the audio description, when we watch a TV show with audio description, or a Netflix movie with the audio description, they're fantastic. But you can tell that, you know, they've seen the movie a couple of times, and they often start describing the scene before it really
Yeah,
starts.
and they have official scripts for it too,
Of
right?
course, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes for me it's stressful because I'm trying to watch the movie and I'm trying to catch what's going on and describe it at the same time. And then I talk over the dialogue and I can't really hear what was said and I lose track of it. So, yeah, it can be a challenge sometimes for sure. But, you know, we usually get through it. But now if you tell me that there's a movie you want to watch, I'll try to watch it beforehand. You know, so that when we sit down to watch it together, I've already seen it. I already kind of know the twists and turns of it, because you don't like to watch a lot of action movies that are pretty easy. You want to watch something with a little more intelligence to it. So there's twists and turns and plot twists.
Action movie is probably harder to describe, though.
Well, this blew up, that blew up, a bunch of guys are shooting at each other. I mean,
Yeah.
they're not that hard, right? But
Yeah.
when you watch something that has a lot of twists and turns to it, like a crime drama, you know, and well, who's that guy? And who's that? Where did that guy come from? And so it's nice to have seen it so I can sort of tell you how everything relates together. Because a lot of times it doesn't come together till the end of the movie. And so, well, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, wait and see. And so, but it's good. You know, I enjoy it for sure. I wish you'd watch more movies with me, but that's not your favorite thing to do, I know.
I don't know, what do you think it would be like to have your vision decline or lose your eyesight or something?
Oh, I can't imagine. It would be terrible at this point in my life, you know. I mean, I'm not young anymore, and I'm very used to living the way I live. You know, I wake up, I look around, I see the ocean and the beautiful scenery, and you know, I get a lot of information, inspiration, you know, from what I see. And so to lose that and to be and not, well, it would be a real challenge for me. You know, I look at you and I don't know if I could do it the way you do it, you know, like just learning new technology. Like when you learn how to use an iPhone, I can barely use an iPhone and I can see the thing, you know, and you're already much more capable at it than I am. So, you know, I would really have to get a lot of help from people to learn how to navigate that world, you know. And, you know, my first reaction would be, forget it, I'm just going to stay home and just have a smaller world. But that's never been your choice, you know. You've always wanted more, and you've always been able to achieve it. So, even this radio show, like, I mean, who thinks that, oh yeah, I'm going to do a radio show now, and I'm going to interview all kinds of people that have had great impacts in the world, and you know, no, you're incredible for sure. I don't know that I could do it like you.
Wow, thank you. Let's not talk about me.
Okay,
So
let's not.
What's the hardest thing for you? You know, to have a wife who is visually impaired.
The hardest thing. I don't know that there's too many hard things. Like I said, you're really, you go to work every day, you work hard, you're not like needy or it's not like I have to do a lot of things for you. So I don't know. I don't know what's hard. That's I don't know. We've been together long enough now, right? Like it's just how I live my life. And like I said, there's nothing. You get around the house just fine. You can go where you want to go. I mean, if you want to go shopping, you want to go to the store, you want to walk for coffee, you want to go down to the beach. Yeah, I'd love to go with you. And if you want to go on your own, you can. So, no, I mean, I don't know. It's my life is a blessing and my life is great. So, I don't find too many hard things in my life.
Well, I don't know. I think you do way more than you think, right? You're very sensitive to what I might need. You describe things very well. And I think this is something would be helpful for people to know. Like when we got out in public, I think often you help to make it easier for sighted people to interact with me. I don't know, did you notice that?
I don't know. I mean, a
You
lot of
kind of
times
tell me what's
people.
going on. I think because
Sure.
sometimes people, when you first encounter a person without sight, they kind of uncomfortable. They're not sure what to
Yeah.
say or what to do, or they sort of don't know how to describe or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you sort of demystify the whole process, right?
No, for sure. And I mean, a lot of times people will ask me things about you. You'll be standing right there and they'll say,
No.
does she want this or does she want a glass of water? I said, why don't you ask her? Like, and again, that's just a general bias. Like, people think if you're blind, you're not capable. And that's so far from the truth. Like, and that's a tough thing for people in general to learn. Like, now when I look at somebody and I see that they're blind or they're in a wheelchair or that they have some disability, I don't make the assumptions I used to make, because you just can't do that. You have no idea what's going on inside that person unless you go and talk to them. And especially for blind people, because they can't interact with their world the same way you and I do, right? Like, you can't go up and talk to somebody that on the train because you can't see them. You don't know they're there unless they're a mouth breather or they're, heavily panting, and then that probably sounds scary and you try to avoid that. So, it's important that when you see someone who's got a disability, you reach out to them a little bit, Not necessarily, they don't need your help, but I'm sure they appreciate just being acknowledged. And
Remember a few months ago, I interviewed Christine Ha on my show, right? The woman who won the MasterChef award. So when you watch her on the show, like what was your experience?
it's a funny show because it's edited, right? It's not like you can focus on watching her. They just show her in bits and pieces. But she always seemed really capable. I mean, they liked showing the parts like when she had to deal with a live crab, and then she was all scared about the pincers and this and that. They tried to play up the fact that, she's blind and she's challenged here, but I was always really inspired watching her. There was a few challenges she had to do where, she had to work as part of a team and she had to interact with people, and you could tell that she was lost at times, because there'd be a lot of things happening around her really quickly, and she wouldn't really be able to jump in and fit in because people weren't letting her know what was what, like, hey, we need you to do this and we need you to do that. I guess people are scared. They don't want to sound bossy and they don't want to sound condescending. But, one thing I learned from you is, we know what we know and we don't know what we don't know. Like, if I don't tell you something, you don't know it exists. If I don't say, hey, the church is really full today, we have to make sure we pick a spot where the dog's not going to be in the way, you have no idea, So it's important that I let you know those things. And same thing for other blind people. Like when they're getting on a subway car, they don't know how busy it is. They don't know that if there's a seat available in front of them or.
But I think we know how busy it is because you can feel the echoing of the subway.
Right.
But you're right, like we wouldn't know sort of where the certain seats are or the empty seat, right?
Unless you start walking up and down the aisle, whacking people with your cane or having your dog check that out, right? I mean, I've never seen you use a cane. I've seen you use a cane once, or I've seen you carry a cane once or twice. I don't think I've ever seen you use it.
Yeah. No, I'm the kind of person in public, I don't grope my hands around too much. Like,
no,
I don't like that sort of look where, you know, you just whack your cane around or grope around with your hands. And I just don't like, I keep things close to my body.
Yeah.
Just don't touch people the wrong places.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's like you told me the story. You were going to work one day and you ran into your boss, Brad, and Brad's blind as well. And I thought that was really funny. Like, how do two blind people bump into each other on the subway train, you know? And,
yeah, I'm not sure.
And I guess you literally had to bump into each other, right? And then that's when you said, hey, Brad, is that you? Because you both said, excuse me or sorry. And then you realized you were dealing with each other, which is kind of cool. Yeah, no, I thought that was always a funny story.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because two blind people trying to find each other in public, that's quite something. But sometimes... you can tell, though. I mean, I guess if you use a cane or guide dog, you can tell someone is approaching, right?
Well, I guess you can hear them. You can hear the cane tapping, right?
Yeah, or you can hear the dog jiggling.
Yeah, the harness on the dog.
Yeah, it sounds different than a regular dog. Usually.
Yeah, there's usually no regular dogs on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if somebody's got a dog, it's usually a guide dog, I guess.
So recently, I got a new guide dog.
Yes.
So she's a yellow lab. And what has it been like for me to bring home a new guide dog?
Well, you know, it's always a bit of a challenge at first dealing with the new dog because they have to learn the environment. They have to learn a new place.
Mm-hmm.
A little bigger challenge this time because we kept the old guide dog. So now we have two dogs in the house.
Yes. And you wanted it, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I ruined that other guide dog.
No, I wouldn't.
You know, by walking it, by not keeping it trained properly, I guess. So, but, you know, she's a cute dog. She's a good, she's a great pet. The first guide dog was a poodle, a white poodle. And, you know, she's a sweetheart. She's a good dog. So, you know, I really wanted to keep her. That seems to be working okay. You know, sometimes she feels a little bit left out, but I think for the most part,
she loves not working. I think.
Yeah, I think that was her whole problem. She didn't want to work, so
yeah, not motivated. Yeah, so you with the second guide dog, like hands would sort of show me the route or the routes to places, right? Kind of teach the new dog routes all over again, and.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'd go over things. Sometimes you have to go over things a few times.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's really weird. Like, my new guide dog, she's very confident. She walks pretty fast, actually faster than Hans. often Hans would walk behind me. And, well, because when Hans walk in front, then she gets too excited. Then she would try to follow him, and she would get excited. So it's actually better that he walks behind.
Mm-hmm.
Behind us. She's very confident, and she works so well on the streets, and you know, we go on different trails because we have beaches around here, and we have seawall walk, right? So we have like a lot of nice nature places to walk around here in streets, and so it's great. But there's this one path at my work from one building to another that for some reason she, for the last 3 weeks since I got home, she's still hesitant, and at some point I just felt really discouraged. I said to her, like, that same path messed up my last dog too. And I don't know what is it about the path that both dogs so hesitant about it. And so Hans said, you know, just being patient. And so,
well, there was a little more to it than that.
What?
When we went, mm-hmm. and I said, well, let's just go and walk it a few times and work it and see.
Yeah.
What's the first thing I said to you? You know, when you took that first little
trust the dog. Yeah.
Trust the dog.
Yeah, because my last guide dog, she didn't do well. So I guess over the course of the 2 years, I kind of held back a lot, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't trust her anymore because she wasn't trustworthy.
Right, and it looked almost like you were trying to guide the dog instead of letting the dog guide you.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
first time I'm telling her that, and it's live on the radio. It's true.
Right. And so yeah, like, so, and then we went over the route, and I guess I felt I had a better orientation, and now she's starting to be okay. So I'm very excited about it, right?
Yeah, but it's amazing how that confidence in the dog feels it right away, you know, that you trust her and that you're going to let her do her thing. And I'm sure it takes a lot of pressure off you that, you know, because how do you guide, how do you steer the dog? Like, you can't steer her because you can't really see. So, well, you can't see at all. So you got to trust her. And this new dog is trustworthy. You know, she knows what she's doing.
Well, you know, during the training, so I was in New York for 2 weeks, and we went to a town, a different a town called Huntington, which is close to Long Island. But one of the last few days, well, 2 days, we got training in Manhattan. So if you could imagine, you know, walking around Manhattan, around the Central Park area, so quite a lot of people, lots of dog distractions, and she did really well, you know. So she's a really good working dog. She works hard, she plays hard, but I don't know about that particular path at my work that she's still uncertain about, and I,
Well,
but I'm really glad that we figured out though.
yeah, well, I think part of it too is her being on her own now, right? Like, when we go together, she still looks over her shoulder to see that somebody's with her, backing her up. And I think now she has to realize it's on her. And when you're there and it's just you and her, you know, she's got nobody behind her to straighten her out if she gets out of line. So, you know, not behavior-wise, but direction-wise. So I think it's just a maturing process for her, and it's a trusting process for you, and it's amazing to watch it come together for sure.
Yeah, like I mean, you know, that sense of freedom that I didn't get using a cane, right?
Yeah.
Like walking, be able to walk fast and just walk freely, and
Right.
it feels really, really good.
And I've always thought that, you know, as a blind person, a cane is kind of a way to, it kind of keeps people away. You know, people don't want to interrupt you with the cane, or you know, because you're focused, and you know, and they don't want to get hit by the cane, and they don't want to get in the way of the cane. So I think it's a little more isolating, where with the dog, people love to come up and ask about the
Sometimes too
dog
much,
too much, for sure.
right? Yeah, with
Yeah.
my last dog, she's a white poodle. She's very cute, so she attracted a lot of attention, and that was the problem too. You know, she enjoyed the attention way more than work.
Right, for sure.
Whereas with my new guide dog, I just really kept the dog to myself. Really, the only person that can really pet her is Hans, my husband. Maybe sometimes when I take off the harness, then sometimes one person at work or something, but for the most part, she's my dog. And you can really see the difference, you know, in the morning when I wake up, when she first hears my voice, she would go into the bedroom and get all excited and.
Oh yeah, no, she's first thing in the morning, comes to Quinn right away. Whereas the other dog, not so much.
Come to hands.
She'll keep sleeping. She isn't
That's true.
she's in no hurry to start her day, for sure. No, it's quite something watching the bond develop between Quinn and the dog. Well, Millie is the dog's name. And she doesn't tell people the name. Somebody asks the name of the dog, I can't tell you, she says. Because, you know, it's important that the dog is totally committed to Quinn, and only Quinn.
You know, at my work or something, they know the dog's name. It's just that, you know, on the street, in public, random people, you know, we were taught to either not tell the name or just tell the wrong name so that you know, not too many people know the name of the dog, I guess.
But I guess it's hard to tell that white lie when you're at church, right? You can't really.
Yeah, so anything else you want to add, Hans?
Well, the dog couldn't come with you last weekend when you were flying the plane, right? So last weekend, some friends of ours flew into town, where we are. It's a little bit isolated on the west coast of Canada. And
Anywhere, like church, schools, hospitals, maybe except for some settings in the hospital where they need to be sterilized or something, right? Need to keep other like delivery room perhaps, or sort of a
yeah.
serious operation room. But otherwise, you know, I used to work in a hospital. I used to work in palliative care, and my other dog, you know, she was not even the last one, my other guide dog, you know, she really brought a lot of meaningful moments for people who were dying. Like they just love to see her. I remember one, there was a patient. She was very angry and she was quite lonely. She didn't, if you imagine at the end of a person's life, and I guess because she was, maybe more difficult, she did not have any visitor. So she was this cranky, angry old lady that a lot of nurses and doctors had a hard time dealing with her. So they didn't even want me to go in there and talk to her. They said, I don't think you could. I don't think you could handle it. She's just very cranky and she could even hit you. I think she hit one of the male nurses. But I walked in one day with my guide dog. And I guess because she loved dog, she instantly was nice to me and the dog. And we started to talk. And then I started to find out, how lonely she really was. And it really taught me a very good lesson about life, where having relationships in life is so important. One day we had a music therapist and she was playing some music and the lady was just singing away and holding my hands. And at the end of her life, she just became unconscious. She couldn't talk anymore. And so I went to her bed and my guide dog, she touched her nose. On the lady's hand, and she actually, my other co-worker described to me she had a kind of like a twinkle in her eye, and that's how she died. When I went away, so I went away before she became unconscious. So when I came back, there was a card for us, and she wrote in there, she wrote that, thank you so much for. People who are blind, they also bring a lot of support to people in wheelchair, to people who have a seizure, whatever.
PTSD.
PTSD, yeah, that's a big trend now. Or, autism, like some children who are autistic, right? Quite isolated from the community or in school. And yet when once they have the dog with them, then the kids start to connect with these kids who are autistic. Right, because the dog is something that's sort of common that they can relate to, and so, and then so the parents and the kids started to see this autistic child more than just the autistic child. So it's pretty amazing what these dogs can do.
No, that's right. And it's something else that's important. There's a lot of people that can get a certificate online and can buy a harness online, and then they try to pass off their pet as some sort of a service dog. And that creates a lot of havoc for people that have real service dogs and have real needs.
Yeah,
So,
that's right.
it's almost, it's in a lot of ways, it's worse than parking in a handicapped spot when you don't have a disability. So, if you know somebody who's faking their service dog credentials, it's important that you let them know that it's a terrible thing to do. And, you would never want to trade, your physical abilities for, like some people say to me, "Oh, you're lucky you've got that disabled parking pass." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Do you want to trade your eyes for one? Do you want to trade your legs for one?" And it's the same thing with the dogs. Working dogs are just that. They work and they make a huge difference to people's lives. So it's not something that you want to take lightly, and it's definitely not something that you want to play off like because you want to take your dog with you in the restaurant because you think it's cute,
Yeah, no, the reason that's a problem because these dogs are not certified, so they're not trained, right? So they might have some bad behaviors, and that create bad reputations for service dogs. Right, that people tend start to think service dogs, create troubles and create mishaps, and so, some restaurants or some places would start to reject service dogs, which legally they're not allowed to, but they still do, and and it caused a lot of trouble, right? Because you have to kind of explain to them, and sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't, sometimes they just don't listen, and so you have to explain. If not, you have to sometimes argue with them, sometimes even bring them to court. And so, yeah, if all service dogs are well trained and certified, then it would make the public a lot more receptive of these wonderful dogs, because they, I look at my dog and she loves to work and she loves to please, Right? And so if a dog can do that for a human, you know, we humans, we can do much better than that.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Hans, for coming on to my show and share with us your thoughts and insights, and really nice to have you.
Okay, well, you're welcome, Quinn. It was a real pleasure and an honor to be on your show. Thank
Okay.
you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinlay Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quinle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.